Gators Breakdown, the Gators Fan Podcast, because there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
The Gators Breakdown Podcast is ready to go. I'm your host, David Waters, and you can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. And Will Miles joins me on this episode, and you can find him on Twitter at WillMilesSEC and his site, readandreaction.com. Will, we have a whole new crop of Gators to discuss and analyze and break down here. After the second early signing period, the first one was a year ago, and now coaches are, I guess, a little more in tune with how to take part in it. But Dan Mullen last year, first year on the job, didn't have a lot of time to bring it all together. This year, bowl game, New Year's Six bowl game, and still having to get all these early signees in here in December 19th and through December 21st for this early signing period.
Yeah, man, it's always exciting to see the new players who are added to the team. It's exciting to sort of break them down, understand where they are, whether they're in positions of need, and how that impacts class rankings and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, this is the most important day in some of their lives. And there were a few former players who tweeted out things this afternoon about making decisions in terms of where they were going. I know I saw Tate Casey tweet something out about when he signed his LOI to come to Florida and how it was a great decision in his life. And so, hey, congratulations to these guys. Earning a scholarship to Florida to, or any of these big schools, but earning a scholarship to Florida to play big boy football is not a small undertaking. They've put in an awful lot of hard work, and congratulations to all of them because they're now part of the family, and we'll try to be as fair to them as we can.
Absolutely, there. And Will, a quick question too. This is our second one now, of course, covering it. Do you like the early signing day? Do you still wish it was just one day? Do you wish one of the other periods was not in December and some other time of the year?
Like the December time frame, I think it takes away from some of the stuff that's going on in the season. Certainly for us, it's interesting just in terms of what it means, and we don't really know that yet. In fact, we've been sort of looking into that, and you know, how have things changed from last year, what can we learn from last year, those sorts of things. I like the February signing day. I mean, if you look at the NFL, they do all their sort of off-season stuff in the off-season. I would like that to be the way college football is, but they also put this in place so that kids didn't get hounded, you know, up until February, and give them the ability to commit early. And so I think anytime you move the power to the players, that's usually something I'm in favor of. So if the players like it, then I hope it stays. And if the players want to see it adjusted, then I hope the NCAA does that.
Yeah, my thought on it is I like when it was just February. For podcast purposes, I don't mind this in December. especially last year when there was no bowl game to talk about. We had a new coach and signing day, so it kind of helped out there. But yeah, I kind of agree, you know, coaches should be able to be, you know, now concentrating on a bowl game. If you have a bowl game, or if you didn't make a bowl game, you're trying to scrounge up the pieces and you know, hit a signing day in February. But if they're going to have two of them, I wouldn't mind one of them being in August before the season starts, because some players kind of know the decision then where they want to go. Let them concentrate on their senior season, much like you said, without being hounded. If there is a coaching change, you know, have a waiver in there that, you know, if there is a coaching change, they can go somewhere else if they so like. But I wouldn't mind seeing one in August and then keeping the one in February as well.
Yeah, the one thing I do think it helps is, you know, when you talk about gray shirts and guys coming in and basically being offered scholarships, and then on National Signing Day sort of being edged out and processed out, I think that's a lot harder to do with the early signing period, because you know who your competition is. You know, if you're somebody who is being recruited by Alabama, you know that there's probably not space for you at this point. So, but conversely, if you're being recruited by Ohio State, you know there's plenty of space for you in the roster and for this year, the number of signees they can have. And so, you know, if you're a player, especially with all the coaching movement, you know, and having to keep up to that, I mean, these players commit and then they have to sit out for a year if they decide to change their mind. The coaches don't have to do that. And so I think giving them more information rather than less is a good thing. I agree with you. I think August would be great for the fans. You know, the question is it best for the players? And I do think that, you know, giving them something in December and then something in February means, you know, if you don't sign in December, then you kind of know what your options are afterwards, just because there's a large swath of players who are already committed, and maybe you make a different decision because of it. So,
All right, we'll break down this Florida Gator 2019, the start of the 2019 recruiting class. But before we do, remember you can find Gators Breakdown on news4jax.com/GatorsBreakdown. Also catch us on iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, Spotify, and find us on social media as well. Gators Breakdown on Twitter and Facebook. And tomorrow I will have Bill Sykes on to have even more signing day coverage. So me and Will tonight, me and Bill tomorrow, we'll have you covered in many, many angles here for this early signing period, early signing day, whatever you want to call it there. So I don't think anybody can really decide what they want to call this thing. So I call it two different things a lot as well. But here we go, Will. The Gators finished the day 16th in the 24/7 sports composite rankings, 13 4-stars, 8 3-stars. Is what they have. That's 21. That's 21. 20 signees and the one commit and the one black there. So that ranks sixth in the SEC behind Alabama, Georgia, Texas A&M, LSU, and Auburn, and right ahead of Tennessee, Mississippi State, and Arkansas. And if you go by average player rating, you can move the Gators up one spot to 15th. And I know we'll be asked, so we went ahead and planned for it. I'll go ahead and get it out of the way. If you want to include Chris Steele, because many people feel like he's, he was supposed to send in his letter of intent today to his school or in the next couple of days, announced January 5th. If you want to add him, 40th best player in the nation, he'll make his choice known, as I said, January 5th. If the Gators were to get him, the class would currently set up 14th. But as it stands right now, he's not in the class. So from what we'll talk about from here on out is the Gators being ranked 16th in the 24/7 sports composite. And Will, it's they made a little bit of move, especially after they got the Lakeland trio. We'll see, of course, what happens in February. But after early signing day, the Gators are 16th.
Yeah, I think there's some good to take out of this. I think there's also some areas for concern, which is really sort of what we've been saying all year, ever since the slow start to this recruiting period started. But you look at where they focused. They have 7 offensive linemen that they've brought in, and clearly that was an area that coming into the season we thought needed quite a bit of work. And Florida was pretty fortunate this year to not have a whole lot of injuries up front. You've got Martez Ivy leaving. You potentially got Juwan Taylor leaving. And so there's going to need to be reinforcements there, and they've really done. They've really reinforced that, and they've reinforced that with high level talent. You look at linebacker, that's the other place where Florida really struggled 2 years ago and really even struggled this year. I mean, Voshon Joseph showed flashes of really, really good play. David Reese showed flashes of really, really good play, but they weren't consistent across the board. And when Reese was out, I think the linebacking core really struggled, especially against Kentucky. And they brought in 4 linebackers in black, you mentioned, but Tyron Hopper, also very, very high ranked linebackers. And so I think those are sort of the two areas of emphasis that Florida had, and they filled some needs there. When you look at where they maybe could have improved a little bit, I think defensive line is a place where they still have to make some play. Obviously with Quashawn Fuller at Florida State not signing over there, that's somebody that they could potentially maybe get to come over on the other side. And there are still some defensive line candidates out there, but the signing of the Lakeland trio, I think, is clearly a big deal for Florida. You need to keep the guys in your backyard. You need to emphasize that. That's one of the things that we've talked about when we've talked about Steele, when we've talked about Kayvon Thibodeau going out into California trying to get those guys. Does that cost you the guys in state? It doesn't appear that it has for these three, at least. And so being able to establish that pipeline from Lakeland into Gainesville, I mean, that's one of the places where Urban Meyer really was strong. Steve Spurrier was strong there, too. And so having that pipeline coming into Gainesville, I think, is a big deal. So, 16th, it's nothing that I'm going to write home about. I'm not going to bounce my kid on my knee and talk about the 2019 signing class and how it defeated all the metrics. But I think there's some really good players here. I think there is a lot of confidence that the staff is skilled at taking these players and molding them into what they need to be. I think there's a lot of confidence that the right players for the staff are coming in. And we'll see what Mullen's able to do with it. I will say that, they're – you mentioned the 5 SEC teams that are in front of them. That's a problem. You can't be out recruited by half your conference or by, a third of your conference on a consistent basis. That's going to have to improve. And we'll see whether Mullen can do that. But, we're only at the early signing stage. I think there's some evidence that we're not going to see a whole lot of movement now that we've had this had this period, and there are a lot of guys who are off the board at this point. But, you know, we'll see what Mullen's able to do. Maybe he's able to flip some high-level guys. If he can bring in Steele and Elam, then I think you can start saying that they've got some elite talent to go with a very solid base of guys that they brought in, like you mentioned, the 13 blue chips.
Yeah, so here we go. You started with it. I'm going to kind of go with it, too. It's filling the need and talk about some positions here. Hey, look, you feel the need at quarterback. I am a big believer. You bring a quarterback in every class. We saw when Florida didn't do that. We've seen the problems that causes. And Dan Mullen has said that's a strategy of his. He said it from the day he was hired. He said it last year when he was recruiting. You got Emory Jones. You got Jalen Jones. You got Anthony Richardson already committed for next year. Look, he's transforming that quarterback room already in just a year's time. First of all, from better play from Felipe Franks, but also on the recruiting trail and getting Emory Jones and Jalen Jones and another one committed down the line. So, you know, you start talking about filling a need. It starts up top. It starts at quarterback. And you have to really like what Dan Mullen's doing there. So also talk about transformation of positions. The offensive line, absolutely transformation there. Signed 7 this cycle. Four of those being 4 stars, and you know, after signing 4 offensive linemen last cycle, so that's 11 in the last 2 cycles. So you know, look, 2 positions that Mullen has come in, transformed, that we saw as some of the biggest weaknesses on the team. You look at 2 positions now that have been completely transformed by, looks like, a talent influx as well, players that fit your system, and what we considered a problem coming into this season, maybe we won't see as too much of a problem in the years to come, Will.
Sure. I mean, you know, the hope is that these guys come in and that they perform and that you hit, you know, you bring in 7 offensive linemen, you only got to hit on 5. So, but again, quality depth, I think, is something that we all knew was missing last year, that if Martez Ivy had gone down the second game with some sort of season-ending injury, it would have meant a whole lot of trouble for that offensive line. And luckily we didn't see that this year, but I'm sure the coaches saw it in practice and saw the areas that they needed to improve and put an emphasis there. You know, particularly the fact that they've got a bunch of high-level 4-star guys who are coming in to play on that offensive line, that's going to be a real shift from what's been there under McElwain. I mean, the offensive line was not an area of emphasis under Jim McElwain. He did not bring in a whole lot of blue-chip guys in that space. Yeah, and so, yeah, I think it's a great thing that they brought them in. It's a good foundation. The question is always, is it enough? But, you know, it's never going to be enough for anybody, really, unless maybe you're Saban. Maybe he's got enough at this point. But, you know, yeah, I think offensive line and linebacker are the areas where they've really emphasized, I think. And the quarterback, I'm glad you mentioned that, because, you know, Jalen Jones has been committed really from the start, ever since Mullen came in there. He's got a lot of physical skills. I know they downgraded him recently to a 3-star, but he was good enough to get upgraded to a 4-star during the offseason. So, you know, whether that's an accuracy thing or whether that's a, you know, exactly why that is, I'm not entirely sure. I'll have to go back and look at some of the statistics. But clearly he's a talented player, and Mullen has shown that he can take guys who have talent and sort of mold them into his system, and he's going to have to do that with Jones.
And, Will, another thing you just brought up and talking about that, and it kind of just triggered something in my head. You're also, when you're bringing in quarterbacks like this, it allows you to not throw them in right away. And now we've seen, I think, Felipe Franks take enough of a step. We definitely saw it this year where Felipe Franks took enough of a big step. You didn't have to throw Emory Jones out there to the Wolves. Now he'll have some experience and maybe a quarterback battle for next year, but it also lets you know that Jalen Jones doesn't have to come in here when he signed and go through spring and, you know, of trying to be the guy. He can work on some mechanics. He can learn the offense and not have to be thrown out there. And that's another part of being able to go get another quarterback, go get one every year. Now these guys can sit and learn instead of having to be thrown out there to the Wolves and thrown out there before they're ready to play.
I mean, absolutely, right? I mean, when we talk about recruiting and rankings and things like that, really what we're talking about is depth, and we're talking about probabilities. So if you bring in 5 5-star guys, chances are 3 or 4 of those guys are going to turn into high-level starters. If you bring in 5 4-star guys, you're probably talking 2 of those guys turning into high-level starters. If you bring in 5 3-stars, maybe you get 1 guy who's a high-level starter. And so the proportion of really what you're talking about is, how are you building depth? And so it's the same thing in the quarterback room. If you bring in a quarterback every year, you don't have to hit on a quarterback every year. You have to hit on one every 4 years. Yep. So, or every 3 years.
Hopefully 3 years. There we go.
Yeah. I mean, if you got a guy going to the NFL, you're doing pretty well at that position. And so, you know, you bring them in, there's a probability they're going to be great. There's a probability they're going to be a bust. There's a probability they're going to get injured because this is a physical sport. And so being able to bring in that quarterback, and that's one of the things that Florida State's really struggling with right now.
Yeah.
You know, with Howell decommitting and going to North Carolina, Taggart hasn't brought in a quarterback yet in any of his two classes. Doesn't look like he's going to bring in somebody for this one. You know,
and if
who's
he does,
if
he does, they're probably settling on somebody they didn't want in the first place.
Well, sure. So, you know, again, there's value to having that relationship early, saying this is the most important guy on the team and I'm going to make sure I have him committed. I'm going to have him committed early and I'm going to have him helping recruit the kind of guys I want on the team, as opposed to waiting out for a high level recruit. But, you know, Howell's a good player. He's been committed there for a while. And so I think a lot of it has more to do with the way the Florida State season went this year than it probably does with anything else. And, you know,
we could jokingly say that, but he just went to a 2-9 team.
Well, you know as well as I do that I do not believe that the on-field results impact the 2019 class that much. But hey, as long as we can make fun of Florida State losing, I'm all for it, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah. You had a bad season. Well, he just went to a team that had a worse season. So there we go. All right. We'll move to the other side of the ball and keep on with the good news here. Another position that we'll see an influx of talent is linebacker. You got Tyron Hopper, the 150th best player in the nation, 7th best outside linebacker. Muhammad Diabate, the 167th best player in the nation, 8th. Best outside linebacker. I'll include unsigned DeJuan Black because he's included in the rankings since he is committed. He dropped a little bit in the rankings this year because he didn't play, but he's still ranked as the 149th best player in the nation without playing a down of football this past fall. He's a 10th ranked inside linebacker in the nation. And then the Gators also brought in 3-star Josiah Pierre to give the Gators another outside linebacker. So when you talk about a position of need that needs not necessarily numbers, but a talent influx, that's what they got here in this group that they brought in.
Oh, absolutely. And not just numbers, but talent. I mean, David Reese last year was a 4-star, 296th overall, and he's the highest ranked linebacker on the roster until these guys get into campus. And so you look at Black, Hopper, and Diabate, they're all top 200 guys. And so you've got a serious influx of talent. You've also got guys who are categorized as inside linebackers and outside linebackers. You add those to David Reese. You add those to David Reese from last year. You add those to Chatfield from last year as well. And now you've got the real makings of a group that has some inside outside capability, the ability to maybe be more multiple in Grantham schemes, which is something that Mullen's been talking about since last year. This is a really good group of linebackers. It's really important for Florida to bulk that up. Last year, I wrote extensively about how McElwain had also ignored this area. And so for Florida to fill that space is significant.
Randy Specials.
Well, you know, hey, we could say that, but Voshon Joseph and David Reese have been really good. Yep. And so, you know, they've hit on some guys and those guys have played pretty well, but it's also pretty clear when you're watching that they have physical limitations and that they have limitations in terms of their ability to stick to the scheme. And so bringing in guys who don't have those physical limitations, and you can sort of, you know, from a competition standpoint, if somebody is messing up the scheme, you put in somebody who's just a talented as opposed to having a significant drop off. So, you know, Florida's going to be better at the linebacker position for the next couple of years because of these guys. It was an area of need. It was an area of emphasis and they got the job done there.
All right, so we'll kind of go through the day that was, Will, when we look at this Wednesday. Of course, we'll keep on with the good news. We'll start with the good news in the Lakeland trio. Diave Hammond, Lloyd Summerall, and Keon Zipperer signed with the Gators. Will, these were some of the best players in this class that Florida was able to bring in, and why getting these three were so important. Zipperer is the 136th best player in the nation, the 4th best tight end in the nation, according to 27 Sports Composite. And the state of Florida's 18th best player, offensive guard Diave Hammond, now the 174th nation's best player, 12th best offensive guard, and state of Florida's 23rd best player. And then Lloyd Summerall is the 237th best player in the nation, 15th ranked weak side defensive end, and the 36th best player in the state of Florida. So coming into the day, Will, these guys were a must get because Florida was on the outside looking in for some of the other big targets that were on the board. These were the three Florida fans felt good about, and it came to fruition. Will Zipperer could be a matchup nightmare at the tight end, H-back position. Summerall is a tall and rangy defensive end had 11 and a half sacks this past year in his senior year. And then Nyavi Hammond, a 6'4", 350-pound offensive guard that the Gators desperately need to shore up the offensive line with upper talent and depth. So, you know, these are the only targets that signed with Florida that weren't already committed to the Gators coming off of a state championship team.
Yeah, you know, we already talked a little bit about just securing Lakeland and how important that is, but also it's important because of who these guys were considering beyond Florida, right? I mean, Zipper and Summerall were considering Miami and considering them pretty heavily. And in fact, last week, you know, I think Zipper had an official visit to Miami, and everything, and sort of the news when they were on their official in Gainesville was that they were considering Miami at the time. So, you know, to have to not only secure that area of the state, but also to secure it against one of your in-state rivals, I think is important. You mentioned tight end. That's a space that, again, under McElwain was lacking, but now they've added Kyle Pitts last year. They've added Zipper this year. We saw Pitts doing stuff on the outside a lot this year, not necessarily on the inside, but, you know, Ciante Lewis is going to be gone pretty soon. You've got Morrill Stevens who's going to be gone. You've got Kroll who came in, but he's only got a year or two of eligibility left. And so, you know, bringing in same thing as a quarterback, right? Bringing in a tight end every year is important to make sure you have the depth, to make sure you have that elite talent. And then I don't think I need to tell anybody why an offensive guard who's a top 200 player is important in the Dan Mullen scheme, right? I mean, we saw the development of the offensive line from game one to game 12 over the course of the season. We saw how they dominated Florida State up front in that game. You know, you start adding elite talent to that, and now you get a team that can dominate anybody up front. And you get a quarterback a lot of time, he's going to be really, really good. And it's not a coincidence that Franks had his best game against Florida State in a game when Florida State couldn't get any push at all up front. And I think the more you see the Florida quarterback protected, the better off he's going to be. And you know, just thinking back to the Michigan game last year, you know, Franks was getting harassed the entire game. Had he been a little bit more comfortable in the pocket, maybe he plays a lot better throughout that year if the offensive line had been better. And, you know, so it's a symbiotic relationship, and certainly having that guy is going to be important.
Yeah, well, a lot of times, you know, there's the popular phrase that their perception is reality. And, you know, these guys were thought, I mean, I don't want to say shoe-ins, but, you know, from a Florida-friendly school or once Florida-friendly school, you know, these guys coming into the day, you don't get these three. You know, these were the three that you get fans felt more confident about more than any other or any other. Luckily, they were also some of the highest, you know, the highest prospects on the board. They are some of the highest prospects in your class. And, you know, perception would, if you don't get those guys, the perception would have been, would have been pretty bad when you go back and look at this class. But you pull these guys in, they were announcing on ESPN too. A lot of people were watching. If you're watching, if you're into college football, you were watching signing day coverage. And hey, look, Florida had pretty much with all three of these guys going to announce. Florida pretty much had a 10-minute PSA. You're talking about Florida, and Tom Luganville was on ESPN talking about how he loves these guys and how he was even speaking of Dan Mullen's development of talent and how good of a coach he is and how Gator fans should feel good about Dan Mullen being the coach and what he can do with the talent that he's going to assemble at Florida. So, you know, Florida got a lot of praise with these guys committing on live TV. And you know, they took their time with these announcements with these three. And like I said, it was kind of a PSA for Florida for 10 minutes that really, really put out a lot of positive outlook when, you know, of course, ESPN, the most powerful voice in sports, is sitting there talking well about Florida for a little while.
Yeah, I mean, these guys were must-haves, right? I mean, if there were players who were 2 hours from Tuscaloosa, Alabama fans would be disappointed if Saban didn't bring them in. If there were players who were 2 or 3 hours from Athens, people would be mad at Kirby Smart for not bringing those guys in. And it should be the same thing for Florida. If there are people within 2 or 3 hours of Gainesville, that should be a circle that Dan Mullen has just circled on the state and says, nobody from these schools goes anywhere but the University of Florida if we want them. And that's the way he's going to have to recruit. And that's the way that he's going to build the program into a juggernaut again, is locking down the areas where guys should grow up saying, I want to play for Florida. And certainly, you know, the last 9 or 10 years has maybe impacted that a little bit, but you know, these guys still remember when Florida was great. I mean, when they were 7 or 8 years old playing Pee Wee football, Florida was winning national championships. And so I'm sure there's some emotional connection to Florida if they've lived anywhere close and they've dreamed of playing in the swamp and they've wanted to be there. And I think Mullen has made that a little bit of a reality based on the way that the season went this year. But, you know, again, I think these are guys you have to get. And then there were guys throughout the day that, you know, you really, really, really want to get that, that we missed on. And that's something that's going to have to improve.
That's exactly where I was going with it wasn't all positive today, Will. So it's exactly what happened. And we have to start at the top. The biggest storyline of the day for Gators was that Lakeland trio and also running back Trey Sanders from IMG. Many thought coming into the day, it was Georgia. Late last night, early this morning, that thought kind of shifted around from what I've been told was Holyfield, the running back for Georgia, probably not leaning going towards the NFL. That may have affected what Trey Sanders was thinking. And when it was all said and done, picks Alabama over Florida and Georgia. Many thought that the family ties to Florida with his brother Umstead Sanders and his mom being a Gator fan would end up pushing Trey Sanders to Florida. If the story is true that he was considering Georgia and then the pick is Alabama, that probably lets you know Florida was third behind those two schools and not as high as many thought maybe coming into the day. So, or, you know, maybe he was just really, really torn and you really don't know how to place those teams, but on the surface, that's what it looks like. Well, and I go back to the word perception. This one hurts perception a little bit because, like I said, the connection there, and but the perception would have been raised. I don't necessarily know how it does it hurt Florida a little bit. Yes, I mean Florida's deep at running back. You have some targets next year but this way you have to get those though. And really, right now you don't know if you're going to get those guys. But you know, perception, getting Sanders, getting a five-star running back. You know, after Ivy and CC Jefferson leave, Florida will not have a five-star on this roster. So this was their first big chance to add a five-star onto the roster. So when I go back to the word perception, it would have helped the perception of Florida to go and say, all right, we battled Georgia, we battled Alabama, we went and got a five-star running back that we really wanted.
Yeah, I mean, I think perception maybe, I don't know that it matters that much. I think you need to get elite players on your team. And right now, Florida doesn't have anybody ranked in the top 100, according to the 24/7 Sports Composite, who's coming in into this class. And if you really want to look at where this class is maybe lacking a little bit, is that's really where it's lacking, is the top-end talent, the guys who the recruiting services are saying are can't-miss prospects. Now, you know, you can argue about how accurate those are, and I think I would argue that they're fairly accurate because the teams that bring in a ton of can't-miss prospects have a lot of guys who go to the NFL and they win a lot of games in college. But, you know, at the end of the day, you have to bring in top-tier guys in order to win in the SEC and in order to win in college football. And so bringing in one of them is the start. You can't get the second one until you got the first one. You can't get the third one until you got the second one. And so Sanders would have been that first domino to fall and would have been an important – it would have been an important statement just from the standpoint of you've beaten Alabama, you've beaten Georgia for that particular guy. I mean, look, I want Mullen to win every game when he's on the field. And I want him to win every recruiting battle when he's recruiting because I want Florida to win everything. And so when a guy goes to Georgia or when a guy goes to Alabama, I'm going to be disappointed because I'd like him to come to Florida. And so, you know, is it the end of the world that you lost one five-star candidate? No. And in fact, I don't think you want to judge a class based on one guy. So, you know, if you get Trey Sanders and your class goes up to 14th, if you thought it was bad at 16th, and you should still think it's bad at 14th. If you think it's great at 16th, you should think it's still great at 14th. I mean, I don't think one recruit should change your perception of an overall class. I think you look at the overall class, the quality of the players, and you say, okay, how does this mesh with what we need? And then also, how does this mesh compared to our competition? And that's how you analyze it. And so, you know, had Sanders picked Florida, that would have been how we would have analyzed it. And the fact that he picked Alabama means that the rich get richer and the gap gets wider. And, you know, there's going to have to be some significant development within the Florida program in order to compete with teams like Alabama and Georgia. Just, you know, obviously you go on the field and you play, and that's what you want to do. I mean, you know, teams with less talent win all the time. They just don't win consistently all the time. And so, you know, eventually these dominoes are going to have to fall, and hopefully that happens in the next month or two.
Yep, and we'll go on to some other targets who decided to go elsewhere instead of Florida, and one along the position, a big position of need, defensive line, where Florida didn't fare so well today either. Derek Hunter picks Texas A&M. As of a few days ago, many thought he was a Gator lean. Texas A&M, Jimbo Fisher come in. You know, he was an FSU commit. you know, 90% of people out there thought that wasn't going to stick. Most people knew. Most people kind of thought it would be Florida who would get his services. Not so much. Texas A&M, Jimbo Fisher come in and get him. And then the defensive lineman who visited this past weekend at Florida, Siaki Ika. I hope I'm saying that name right. I have no idea if I am or not. He chooses LSU after a late push from the Gators. And I will say I talked to some people around the program. Florida really, really impressed his family. And it came down to the 11th hour last night. Him and his family were talking. Apparently there was a story out there where they weighed every school in a point system and Florida actually won out there. Ika wanted to go to LSU. LSU had been on him for a while. I think since October. He was supposed to be in Alabama's class. That didn't work out. Alabama pushed him out. That's the only reason the Gators even got a visit this past weekend. Florida impressed him so much to kind of put in his head that it could be the Gators to be his next team. But LSU wins out there in the end. And then also defensive lineman Brandon Dorlus chooses Oregon over Florida after decommitting from Virginia Tech a couple weeks ago. Most people thought that was the shoe-in after he decommitted from Virginia Tech right down the road. From the Gators. So that was three defensive linemen, Will, that the Gators, some people felt good about Hunter and Dorlus as of, you know, if you wanted to say a week ago, and then the Gators kind of just strike out there today.
Yeah, I mean, that's an area of need, and it's an area that they needed to fill, and they haven't done that yet. I mean, Summerall's a good player, and certainly they got a defensive tackle in Jalen Humphreys, who's also a very good player. So they do have two blue chips at that space. So, you know, Dorlus would have been – I mean, he's a three-star candidate. He's a good player, but he's not somebody that you look at and say, hey, he's an immediate difference maker. Hunter – you know, he's been sort of a weird recruitment this entire year. No one's really known where he's going. So I don't know that you can be too disappointed that he picked A&M. I mean, no one, I really think, even thought he was going, even considering A&M until sometime recently. You know, the Thibodeau thing, I don't think anybody ever thought he was coming here. But again, this is sort of indicative of not drawing that circle around Gainesville. I mean, unless you're drawing a circle that encompasses the entire United States, you know, and spending resources on defensive linemen who are out there. And I mean, I think Florida should go after the number one guy in the country or number two guy in the country, depending upon which service you look at. But, you know, they've missed on a lot of the defensive linemen they've been looking at. So, you know, we'll see what they do. There are still some guys out there. There aren't a whole lot of guys out there, but there's still some guys out there potentially that they can flip. One of the silver linings for today, and we'll probably get into this a little bit, but, you know, Florida State didn't get all their guys signed, which means you still have the capability of flipping some of those guys. And so, you know, we'll see whether Florida has the ability to do that, because there are some good guys that they're very good players that the Seminoles have committed who decided not to sign today. And, you know, I'm not exactly sure what kind of sign, what that's indicative of in terms of what's going on in Tallahassee, but maybe Mullen can take advantage and bring some of those guys in.
Yeah. So one more signee that could have happened today. We don't know yet. As I mentioned earlier, Chris Steele, cornerback there from California. We'll know for sure January 5th. It's kind of a weird story to me because, okay, if you do sign it today, tomorrow, or Friday, what are the chances that doesn't get leaked out? I mean, you know, I think you're taking a pretty big chance there. You know, one is, okay, say you do sign to Florida and other schools find out, you know, if you want to follow the breadcrumbs, you know, you'll start seeing other schools offer cornerbacks that maybe thought they had a good chance at Steele. Or you know, one of those other schools can say, okay, he signed at Florida, so let's move on. So, I mean, I know he's trying to create suspense. I know he wants to make an announcement. So, you know, if it is within this three-day window, I have a hard time finding out that it doesn't get out. But officially, we have to wait till January 5th when Chris Steele will announce, like as I mentioned, one of the top 50 players in the nation. Position of need for the Gators as well to bolster up, you know, the talent behind what they already have at cornerback. You want to get back to that four-star, five-star status, high elite status at cornerback that Florida's known for, and it will start with Chris Steele.
Yeah, you're right. This has been a weird one. I mean, this is one where when he initially announced his commitment to USC, I think the video was recorded and edited by Gator people, and then you know, and so it's been sort of odd from the start. And then he's been flirting with Florida, and then there was some discussion of Oregon, and then you know, reports of some sort of weird back alley meeting at USC this weekend. So you know, I have no idea. I know that it's probably not the best strategy to be hinging all your hopes on a guy in California. I think there's a lot working against you when it comes to pinning your hopes on your best player for the class coming from out there. Now, yeah, hey, if Steele comes, then hey, some of the resources were obviously worth it, because whenever you can bring in a guy who's top 40, you have to do it. And you have to spend the resources that are necessary to do that. But there are some top 40 guys who are probably 2 or 3 hours away from Gainesville too, who have decided to go elsewhere, and that's an area where I hope that the recruiting improves in year three under Mullen, because that's really where Florida's going to be able to get back to an elite class. But you know, you're right. I mean, having a cornerback with that sort of elite talent, being able to put him out on an island. You know, we remember Joe Hayden. We remember Janoris Jenkins. We remember Vernon Hargraves. Remember Tease Tabor. Those were all very, very high-ranked guys coming in. Certainly, you know, Wilson and Marco Wilson and C.J. Henderson have been very, very good at corner. And those guys were pretty highly ranked too. But, you know, there were clearly some depth issues on the backside with Chauncey Gardner-Johnson leaving. They need to fill that gap as well. They've got three defensive backs that they signed thus far. You know, Chester Kimbrough is a high-level three-star. And then you've got Jaden Hill, who's a low-level four-star. You bring in somebody who's a high-level four-star, and all of a sudden your depth looks really good, but also your talent level looks good too. So, you know, being able to bring somebody into Grantham's defense who can play man-to-man is really important. And so hopefully Steele comes, and whether it gets leaked tomorrow or whether we wait till the 5th, as long as he chooses Florida, I'm not going to begrudge him his path to where he's committed to.
I'll say I'll feel good there. I'll leave it at that. So let's go on and talk about some positions that could have been better or maybe will be addressed, coming up here for the Gators going into the February signing day. And you look, they missed on Trey Sanders, but they do have Naquan Wright there. Florida would have taken two running backs. Having one running back is fine. I'm not worried about having one running back there with what Florida has, with what the targets they have coming up in years to come. Naquan Wright, people that I know coaching high school football here, really love this kid, really love his ability and what he showed his senior year there. So I think Gator fans should be excited at a skill player there. But you turn and kind of look at wide receiver there, and not really a talent influx there, much like what we were kind of talking about the linebacker core there. And Dan Mullen, really, really high on three-star Jamarcus Weston, and he said how good of a person he is and his character, and you could really tell Mullen was kind of genuine there in his signing day press conference there. But then Chris Doering said something on SEC Network that really caught my attention when talking about Weston, and quote, he didn't go to any camps, played at 6'3", 205. If he would have gone to camps, he would have been a five-star. So that comes from Chris Doering, former Gator wide receiver. We know we've had him here on the podcast as well. So Chris is pretty much a straight shooter. He was pretty critical of the Florida program this fall. So, and he knows wide receivers as well. So, hopefully Chris saw something there that, we can really look at when it comes to Weston here. Also, Deontay Marks, another three-star receiver, was pretty exciting on the field this time that fall. And then Trent Whittemore played safety, cornerback, wide receiver, and even quarterback at his school. Started on varsity as a freshman and 1,374 receiving yards, 72 touchdowns on – or 17 touchdowns on 93 receptions as well, with three rushing touchdowns in his high school career. So, Will, there's potential at wide receiver, and we know that's a scary word, just not the top-end talent that we would like to see. So I have great talent there already. So maybe these guys can kind of come in and develop a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you've clearly seen what Mullen wants to do at the wide receiver position. I mean, obviously, Riley Cooper is sort of the guy you think of in terms of the prototypical – maybe guy who isn't a complete burner, but somebody who can be really productive in Mullen's offense. Both Marks and Weston are very tall. They're big guys who are going to be able to go up and high point the ball. Certainly Trevon Grimes that he brought in last year has sort of the same profile in terms of being tall, being able to go get it. I think it's pretty clear that he likes the tall wide receivers, thinks he can take advantage of some mismatches when they get numbers advantages. Whether a guy can beat his guy in the open field or not, doesn't really matter whether he gets separation if he's 6 inches taller than the competition. But certainly I think there's work to be done there. I don't know enough about Weston to be able to say that he's a five-star. If Doering says he's really good, then that's great. Guys who are three-star, who are going to do elite turn into very, very good players to even elite players in college football all the time. It's just at a much lower percentage than 4 stars and 5 stars. And so, you know, I'm never going to look at somebody and say, he's a 3 star, he's a bad player. I don't think they are. In fact, I think like I said at the start, anytime you get a scholarship to play at a place like the University of Florida, you're a really, really, really good football player. You know, the biggest issue here beyond just the dearth of a can't miss prospect is that there's only two wide receivers on the list. And, you know, you need three or four on the field at any given time. You think about offensive line, they signed 7 guys. You need 5 of them on, you know, the 5 of them on the field. Same thing with wide receivers. If you need 3 or 4, you probably need to be signing 3 or 4 every class. And so, you know, that's a place that hopefully they could find somebody and bring somebody in before February. But if not, as a place where Florida might find themselves a little bit thin in a couple of years, just because of the only having 2 signed for this class.
Yep, and as far as defensive line there, we mentioned the misses there, Will, just recently. But, you know, Gators bring in highly rated 4-star Jalen Humphries on 24/7 Sports, national ranking, 251st ranked player there, 17th ranked at his position. Florida had a little summary about him of what they put out, known for his versatility and his ability to play inside and outside on a defensive line, 6'4", 314 pounds. So really, if you look at it, he's the only true defensive lineman that Florida is going to bring in. Lloyd Summerall can play in, but he may be that rush in outside linebacker type when it's all said and done. So, you know, the Gators definitely need the bigger body types. And Mullen even said so in his signing day press conference.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's great that he's able to see the areas of need and voice them. And, you know, I don't imagine that was unintended. I'm guessing he's sending a message to a couple of guys he's been talking to and basically saying, hey, we need you. Wink, wink, come on over here. And so we'll see whether he's able to close that gap. I mean, one guy, again, I said this earlier, one guy does not make or break a class. So I'm not going to say, oh, because they signed one more defensive lineman who's a blue chip, that makes this class elite. And I'm not going to say, oh, because they missed on one defensive lineman, that means this class is garbage. I don't think either one is true. I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. I think you have to take the entire class as a whole. And so, yeah, it'd be great if they had more defensive linemen. I think the guys they signed, though, are blue chip guys. They're more likely to turn into difference makers on the field. And that's something that was missing under McElwain at the defensive line is, you know, Ja'Kai Polite turned into an awesome defensive end. That's a rare thing to have somebody who comes in as a 3-star who ends up being a 1st-round draft pick. And so, you know, does that indicate that maybe they were really good at finding diamonds in the rough? Sure. But, you know, you don't want to rely on that long term. And so bringing in guys who are top 300 or even top 200 rated prospects is really important at that position. So even if you don't have the numbers, the fact that they're highly ranked guys, I think makes a difference.
Yeah, saw it on the YouTube chat. So if I said it wrong, Humphrey's 6'4", 314. So I don't know if I said 6'10", but no, I didn't mean to say that if I did. So.
That'd be a big boy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, sign me up right now. So if we we'll go to the secondary right now, only Chester Kimbrough and Jadon Hill signed today, and they both fit the cornerback position more so than safety, of course. So the Gators may be bringing in Chris Steele soon, but he's another cornerback mold. So is Kyrie Elam. So I'm not really the sure of the plan at safety for the Gators when it's all said and done this class.
Yeah, you wonder whether maybe somebody like Trey Dean or Amari Burney goes out and takes that space. Those guys were actually recruited as safeties last year, and then Dean was brought in to play corner when Marco Wilson went down. And so with Chauncey Gardner-Johnson leaving, certainly that sort of role is open for somebody like Burney or maybe even Trey Dean. And, you know, these guys coming in may get pretty immediate playing time, especially if there's an injury or two, just because there isn't a prototypical safety out there. I mean, Donovan Siner's a really good player, but – you know, there are also deficiencies. I know against Georgia, he was exploited in one-on-one coverage a little bit. And so they may need to do some mixing and matching, especially as these guys are younger, to make sure that they've got the right guy on the field. So almost have like a nickel and a dime package and then have more of a run package, just like you would do with linebackers who are physically limited or scheme limited because they're younger. You can do the same thing with the defensive backs.
Well, okay. One thing I wanted to get at here is I think we have to take a look at the state of Florida and what the Gators were able to do at this early signing period in the state of Florida. And if Florida's going to get back to the elite recruiting that we've discussed, they have to start getting the state's top talent in the fold. They need to be Gators. And according to 24/7 Sports, you know, you have to go to Keon Zipperer before you find the highest ranked player that is committed to the University of Florida that is from the state of Florida. He's the 18th ranked player in the state. So now, you know, we'll see what happens with Akeem Dent, Kyir Elam, Mark Anthony Richards. But Will, you look at the top, and now I know the whole IMG stigma and how you want to, if you want to count those guys or not, but you know, some of those guys are from the state of Florida. But the top three players in the state of Florida are all from IMG. Nolan Smith, committed to Georgia. Trey Sanders, committed to Alabama. Evan Neal, committed to Alabama. Frank Latson, committed to Clemson. The sixth best, Tyreek Stevenson, will decide between Georgia and Miami. Will, this is a trend that definitely, you know, has to change. You know, I don't want to harp too much on next year's class just yet. You know, we need to concentrate on what we have here. But it does look better there for the Gators. DeMarcus Bowman, the third best player in the state. The Gators kind of in good shape there a year away from now. Wide receiver Leonard Manuel is the fourth best. There's a lot of buzz about Florida with him as well. Florida commit Kayvon Lee is 11th best player in the state. You know, Gators already have him in the fold. But if you go back and look at this class, Will, this is it's been a trend for way too long that some of the state's best talent is not going to Florida. And in this class, they're not going to Florida State or Miami either. They're headed out of the state.
And well, not only that, they're going to the rivals that Florida's going to have to go through in order to win the SEC. I mean, Clemson, you mentioned there for Ladston, but everybody else is going to Alabama or Georgia. And so you can't have guys in your backyard going to Georgia. You just can't. You can't have guys in your backyard going to Alabama because you're eventually going to come play them. You know, and I know there was some sort of quote about Saban talking to a guy who wound up committing to LSU and basically said, well, I guess we'll have to kick your butt every year. I mean, in some capacity, that's sort of what's going to end up happening if these guys keep leaving the state. And it's not, I mean, the state of Florida is a microcosm for recruiting overall, right? Because Florida is so loaded with talent that really, if you're a Florida team and you win Florida, you're going to be ranked really high nationally. And So if you go back and look at nationally what Florida coaches have done in the second year, you know, you can look at Mullen and say, hey, he's got 13 blue chips, and Zook had 14 in his second year, Meyer had 18, Muschamp had 16, and McElwain had 9. And you're like, okay, well, if Mullen can pull in a couple of more blue chips, he's going to be right up there with Zook and Muschamp and closing in on Meyer. But then you look at the top 100 talent, and Zook had 12, Meyer had 9, Muschamp had 6, McElwain had 4, and Mullen's got 0. And so that's really, I think, where the concern lies is not necessarily the, you know, the depth of the class is really, really good going from, you know, basically 150 in the nation all the way out. It's the 150 forward that's been the issue. And that's why guys like Steele and Trey Sanders and Kyir Elam and guys like that are so important, because, you know, you need that top end talent. And that the top end talent is in Florida. So, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence that nationally they're struggling to get top 100 guys when they're struggling to get top 100 guys in the state. So it's going to have to turn around. They're going to have to put boots on the ground, build relationships, start building those pipeline. I know Lakeland's got a couple of really elite guys coming the next couple of years. Certainly the 2020 class, you know, I think is going to be impacted by the 9-3 record this year, the improvement from Felipe Franks, the improvement from the defense, sort of the improved atmosphere around the team. And the 2021 class, we're already seeing they've got a 5-star guy committed there, really high level 4-stars committed as well. But, you know, I don't want to wait 2 years for these guys. I'm as impatient as anybody, so I'd like to see it now. But, you know, hey, you deal with the cards you're dealt. I think Mullen will do a good job of coaching these guys. I think there's quite a bit of depth. And I think if we look back, so Florida this year, if you took the last four recruiting classes, they were at an average star rating of 3.44. Last year, Mullen brought in a class that had an average star rating of 3.63. This year, thus far, the average star rating is 3.65. So he's slowly improving the talent compared to where it was under McElwain. And so we're going to see some improvement. The problem is that Alabama is basically at 4. When you look at the average, and the same thing with Georgia. And that's a pretty significant gap in terms of talent. And Mullen's going to have to close that gap at some point, or he's just going to have to outcoach both Saban and Kirby on a yearly basis in order to get there. And, you know, if he's capable of doing that, eventually these classes are really going to get loaded, because if he can prove he can beat those guys with classes in the tens, you know, all of a sudden people are going to decide they want to come. The problem comes when you can't get over that hump and people keep going to Alabama and keep people keep going to Georgia. So again, I said at the start, I mean, you know, this isn't doomsday. It isn't the end of the world, but it is what we saw in April and May, sort of the slow start and how things don't necessarily just all of a sudden boom hit when the season comes and you have a good season. You know, this is what we were concerned about in April, is that sort of the where they were is where they were going to end up, not necessarily in overall ranking, but in terms of player quality. So, you know, I think there are some positive signs here, but I think there are some areas for improvement. And certainly I think Mullen would admit that as well.
We all got a few tweets here, actually, that kind of just spoke to everything we just spoke to here in the last few minutes. And I'll read a few of those. I'll read some more tomorrow as well on the episode with Bill and I. But Ben Walbright says, it was a successful day. The Lakeland sweep was huge. The pipeline is established. Sure, not getting Sanders or an extra defensive lineman is disappointing, but we're in a good spot to regroup and make another push to February. Dustin Woolbright says, successful day. We did what we were supposed to do by holding on to our commits and adding three quality players. Missing Dorless hurts, but it is recoverable. Time to celebrate the new arrivals, point to bowl prep, and February signing day. Ryan Hinckley says, met needs on defensive line. Met needs except defensive line. Solid class, but not elite on paper. Adding a few top 100 guys before February will be huge. Harold Jackson says, still not on par with the big boys. That's the standard. Good class, though. So there will those four comments there. Yeah, talking about you established a pipeline. Of course, talking Lakeland there. Discussing some of the players that we did miss, like Dorless, but still time to recover in time for February. And also a couple of notices there that, yeah, this is a solid class, but going back to the points we just made, you got to start getting the elites up top.
Yeah, and I mean, the concern here is that, so last year in the SEC, you know, when you looked at the top eight teams and where they ranked after early signing day, there were three teams that improved and then five teams that didn't, that either stayed the same or went backwards. The five teams that stayed the same or went backwards had established head coaches. The three teams that saw improvement were Florida, Texas A&M, and Tennessee. And those are all teams that had new coaches coming in. And so I think that's indicative that those coaches were building relationships and that guys held off until February to sign with them because it was such a quick turnaround to the early signing day. And so they didn't necessarily sign right away. And we saw that with Florida, with some of the guys who came in who didn't necessarily sign in December. I don't think you're going to get that bump this year in the second year. You've had a full year to build relationships with people. Sure, there are a couple of guys who maybe are waiting for you know, who are waiting for the February signing day just because that's what they've always wanted to do, or you got Steele waiting until January and that sort of stuff. But I don't think you're going to see a 7 or 8 step increase in terms of overall ranking. So really what you're looking at is a ranking somewhere between probably 12 and 14 is where we end up if they get Elam, if they get Steele, and if they maybe flip Fuller or somebody else who's a high level 4-star. And you got to ask yourself, is that good enough in year two? You know, all the other coaches other than, well, and even McElwain saw significant improvements from year one to year two. This would mean that Mullen has seen just sort of a moderate improvement from year one to year two. And I think when you look at overall 24/7 ranking, it'd actually be a little bit of a step back in terms of player quality. So that's concerning. It's concerning also that when you look at the early signing day, so this was as of 2 p.m. today because I couldn't look at it after that, but there were 11 of the top 50 who were unsigned or uncommitted. But there were only 4 of 50 to 100. There were 4 of 100 to 150, and there were 6 of 150 to 200. So only 25 of the top 200 guys were left on the board. So we're basically 90% of the way done with class. So if you don't get those targets who are still out there, there isn't really anybody else to flip. And so, you know, they're going to have to hit on everybody to move up significantly. And you look at a team like Ohio State that only has, I think, 16 commits or something like that. We're not going to go in. They're going to get 5 or 6 more guys to sign, and they're going to go flying up the board at some point too. So I think we're kind of where we're going to be, like somewhere in that 13 or 14 range. You can make your own decision as to whether you think that's good enough. I think we've made a case that that's not good enough to compete in the SEC on a regular basis, that, you know, it's going to be a struggle against some of those teams that have recruited at very, very high levels. And, you know, I'm interested to see whether Mullen can buck the trend, because he proved last year that he's a heck of a coach. And so, and at Mississippi State, he proved it too. You know, so he was bringing in classes that were you know, typically in the 25th range nationally. Well, now he's bringing in classes that are in that 12 to 14 range. And what does that mean overall for the program? And is he able to get them into that five, you know, basically a top five team from that? Or does he need to see an uptick in recruiting? And, you know, we'll see. I mean, I think he is one of the lead to success, to success in recruiting. And hopefully we're seeing that in 2020 and 2021. But, you know, this isn't a class I'm going to give an A grade to. I don't think that's, I mean, an A grade would have been up there competing with the top four in the SEC, you know, LSU, A&M, Alabama, and Georgia are 1, 2, 3, 4. It's not like they're 1, 6, 9, and 12, and we're sitting at 16. It's 1, 2, 3, 4. That's who we're competing with year in, year out. And you're going to have to be there to compete with them on a regular basis.
Yeah. Well, two similar thoughts here. Kind of in the tweets on these. Brian at Gator 561 is satisfied but not blown away, adding the Lakeland kids made today a success despite missing on a few others. Having all but one LOI in is huge. Don't have to worry about holding on to those guys that can now focus on filling the class out with top guys and hit the 2020 class hard. And Will, one that I think is pretty good. Happy and disappointed. Is that possible? So
you know, I mean, you look at the spectrum of things that can happen, and this was sort of like right in the middle, right? Yeah. I mean, if the Lakeland trio had all decided to go elsewhere, it would have been a complete catastrophe.
Yeah. Right.
And if Trey Sanders and some other guys had decided to come to Florida, well, all of a sudden you're looking at that, and you know, people on Twitter are giving us crap about being so critical about recruiting earlier in the year.
Oh, some are anyway.
Well, you know, that's fine. So they can have their opinions. I mean, you know, in April and June, we talked specifically about looking where the class was and said it was behind. And, you know, I remember writing that it was going to be.
We never once said Dan Mullen can't recruit.
No,
those words never came out of our mouth. So,
well, I mean, at the end of the day, you got to look at what's on paper though. And you got to say, hey, this is where we are. You know, and we'll see in February. I mean, maybe he pulls him, I don't want to say miracle, but maybe he does a really, really good job of closing in February and they flip a five-star, you know, you've still got Akeem Dent who hasn't signed with Florida State. You got Quashawn Fuller who hasn't signed there either. You know, you bring in Steele, you bring in Elam, and all of a sudden things look a lot differently. And I certainly hope that happens. Cause anytime you can bring excellent players to Florida, that's something you want to do. But, you know, I think this is the foundation for a very, very good team. Whether it's the foundation for a championship team is going to have a lot to do with whether Mullen can bring in supplemental classes in the next couple of years that are significant, that have a lot of high-end talent. It's going to depend on how he can develop his quarterbacks as it does for every program. And I'm excited to see whether he can do that.
All right. Well, let's take a look at the rankings before we go. The final rankings, I don't think we ever really looked at that and kind of what Florida was facing there. And where kind of the SEC teams are and some of the competition, in-state competition as well. So Alabama number one, Georgia number two, Texas A&M number three, LSU number four. That's in the nation. Four of the top teams in the nation in recruiting are from the SEC.
And three of them we have to play every year to win the conference.
Right, more than likely. Georgia and LSU for sure, and then Alabama in the SEC title game, or heck, if Texas A&M was to win the West, that would be a third as well. So.
Or LSU again, right? I mean, if you think about who's going to win the West, it's probably going to be one of those three, and so you're going to play three of the four every year to have to win the SEC.
Yeah, Oregon at number five, and man, I tell you what a job Cristobal has done coming to Florida, get talent from Florida to go all the way out west, and getting Thibodeau as well. So Oregon at number five, there, Oklahoma number six, Clemson number seven, Michigan number eight, Texas at number nine, Penn State at 10, another SEC tunk comes in at 11 with Auburn, a team you have to play next year. A team that has been recruiting pretty well. But, you know, for all said and purposes, I think Gator fans feel pretty confident about that game next year. Ohio State at 12 with 16. Auburn only had 17 commits as well. So they'll probably move up a little bit, maybe lose some guys. We'll see what happens there. But Ohio State was 12th, only 16 commits. So they'll, as Will mentioned earlier, they'll move up. Notre Dame comes in at 13. Florida State at 14 there. So if you look at them, Florida State, 19 signees commits combined. 14 have signed a letter of intent. So five of their commits did not sign. So Akeem Dent, Nick Cross, Brandon Gant, Travis Jay, Quayshon Fuller. We said a few of those names a couple times here. All those guys did not sign with Florida State. So it would be interesting to see if they can keep a hold of those guys or those guys flip to other schools. And we'll see.
I want to go to that real quickly because you mentioned Cristobal at Oregon, and everybody was really sort of in awe, I think. And I think some of us as well were concerned in terms of Taggart pulling guys from Florida out to Oregon. You got to wonder at this point whether that was Cristobal pulling people out to Oregon, because Taggart can't even get the guys in the state now that he's in the state. So, it's really been a disaster of a year up there in Tallahassee, and I am enjoying every minute of it, and hopefully Florida can make it even worse coming into February. But anyway, you'd mentioned Oregon and you'd mentioned Florida State. I wanted to make sure I got my shot in.
Absolutely. So that was Florida State at 14th right now, so we'll kind of see where they go in the next few weeks. Washington at number 15. Of course, the Gators at 16. Tennessee right behind Florida at the 17th ranked class. Stanford 18, of course, Elijah Higgins, big-time wide receiver target for Florida, ended up going to Stanford. Not really a surprise there. Dan Mullen's former team, Mississippi State, is at 19, and probably one of the bigger surprise, Will, in the SEC, as well as Arkansas in the top 20 in recruiting after early signing day.
Yeah, well, I look forward to more competition in the West. So. As long as it's not Missouri or Kentucky or Vanderbilt or somebody who's going to be competing with us on a regular basis, I'm all for it.
And I'll end it at 25, so we'll go USC, kind of a surprise, all the way down at 21 with 20 commits. So a team in L.A. not recruiting too well. South Carolina at 22, Ole Miss at 23, Nebraska 24, and Purdue at 25. So a lot of SEC teams there in the top 25. Kind of ridiculous when you think about it, but that's life in the SEC, Will. That you're going to play teams that recruit just as well or not better than you, even though you're highly ranked in the nation. You may only be about sixth in the SEC.
Yeah, well, I don't want to steal Bill's thunder, but he always talks about conference placement when it comes to recruiting and how important that is. And so some of the work I've done has also indicated that that's really important too, just from a winning percentage standpoint. And so it's harder in the SEC. It just is. And, you know, people can argue and say, oh, you know, you play cupcakes on non-conference, you don't come out of the Southeast. Well, the reality is when you play Florida State, you play Miami, and then you play an SEC schedule, you shouldn't have to come out of the Southeast because that's where the best teams are. And so if some of the better teams were elsewhere, maybe they'd go play them. But it's a tough place to play, and that's what makes it fun, right? If you come out of the SEC, you figure you're battle-tested and ready to win a championship.
All right, Will. Anything else, man?
Yeah, I just want to thank everybody. It's been a year since I launched Read and Reaction. I had an article this past week just sort of thanking everybody. You know, I've had people reach out to me via direct message and give me ideas for the website. I've certainly had you support it, both letting me come on here, but then also letting me push the articles and retweeting them and all that sort of stuff. And then, you know, we've had some people support the site on Patreon, and I just really appreciate, you know, the fact that anybody would think that what I write is worth money is a really humbling thing. So, you know, I'm going to keep doing this. I'm going to keep putting out as much content as I can, and certainly want as much interaction from the fans as we can get. But I just really want to say thank you, because, you know, I launched it a year ago. I didn't know whether anybody was going to read it. And, you know, I had something the other day that got more than 20,000 reads. Wow. So, you know, it's really cool to see the site grow, to see the traffic grow, to see the participation grow. But that's really just because people have shared it. People have seen some sort of value in it. And I just want to say thank you for reading.
Yeah, absolutely. Will does great work. Will, it was kind of funny. You left SEC country before they even went under, and kind of started the Read and Reaction venture there. And it's been some great work. A lot of articles and a lot of thoughts that you can't get anywhere else. And I think people have definitely noticed that.
Yeah, man, I appreciate that. It's fun to do. It's fun to bring a different perspective. I mean, certainly living in Philadelphia, I'm not going to be somebody who tells you where Summerall is going to commit. I'm hopefully going to tell you what it means that he committed. And, and that's sort of been the ethos of the site. And hopefully we've been delivering on that. And I look forward to interacting with everybody, and hopefully can bring some good content this coming year too.
Yeah. And I don't want to like humble brag or anything on this, but I wish people kind of knew how hard it was to have families and full-time jobs and still do what we do. Because it is, and I think you and I have done it enough. We have to thank our families a whole lot for allowing us to do this and let Gator Nation enjoy what we do.
Absolutely. It's a bit of an illness, but but you know, I mean, I started writing originally because I figured I was gonna just bore my dad and my brother with my opinions, so I may as well bore other people with them as well. And you know, it is a lot of hard work, but it's a lot of fun and it's rewarding and it's fun to be part of a community. You know, we live in a world where not to get too large picture, but you know, we live in a world where there's a lot of division and where there's a lot of you don't necessarily have the same community that you had maybe 50 or 80 years ago, just in your backyard, and people move around a lot and all sorts of stuff. And football is one of those things that's just a community thing. It's a communal thing. Every Saturday, there are Democrats and Republicans and libertarians and scientists and liberal arts majors and all those people coming together around one common goal. And that's a really cool thing. And, you know, I've experienced that community over the last couple of years, and it's really brought value to my life. So, you know, again, thank you everybody for reading, and, you know, it's worth putting in the hard work because it's fun and it's rewarding.
Absolutely. Absolutely there. So, all right, Will, I'm going to give, listeners and viewers and all that good stuff what they want. They want Bill Sykes, and Bill Sykes will be on tomorrow.
you were able to commandeer him in the morning, so that's
luckily. Today was my first day of vacation for the holidays, so I was like, "Yes, Bill, I can fit you in on the morning schedule."
Well, you know, he's one of those night walkers. He's always up late at night and doing all sorts of stuff. You'll get a message from him like 3 a.m. What was he doing up? And part of that is because of his job, but I think part of it's just sort of his personality too. So I look forward to hearing what Bill has to say. And certainly we get to hear from him behind the scenes all the time, but I know the fans love hearing from him and I look forward to hearing what he has to say.
Yeah, I'm going to surprise him one of those days and actually reply at 3 a.m. and see what happens.
Then you'll end up in a deep conversation about about how star rankings are underappreciated by people. I'm not sure you want to get into that at 3 a.m. there, buddy.
Yeah, that's true. That means I won't be going back to bed till 6 a.m. So
it'll be good. We love Bill. It'll be good to have him back on the podcast. And I know he's sort of been itching. This is always the season where he gets the most the most jacked up. So I'm sure he's going to come with all sorts of different facts and, you know, hopefully he can keep it to an hour and a half for you there, buddy.
The 5-star nerd will be making his appearance in the next episode of Gators Breakdown. So, Will, yeah, I hope you have a good Christmas, man. It's kind of will be our final episode together before the holiday. So have a good Christmas with you and your family. And I think this episode was really good. I think we did some good things here.
Hey, right back at you, man. And Merry Christmas to everybody out there. And we're not going away. We can't stay away. Stuff. So looking forward to the bowl game, and there'll be some previews up and then a recap of that too, and then back to the recruiting for February. So never stops, never a dull moment, and we'll be there for it.
All right, you can find all that on Will's site at readandreaction.com, and you can follow Will on Twitter at @WillMilesSEC. I'm the host of Gators Breakdown, David Waters, and you can find me on Twitter at @GatorDave_SEC. Guys and girls out there, thanks for listening to this episode of Gators Breakdown.